action?
Both of them.
Yeah.
Together.
Okay,
great.
Okay. Just a little information to give us a context for tonight. Like I said, Radical Women and Freedom Socialist Party are two groups that were founded on the idea of socialism and feminism in putting the question of race, sex, and sexuality on the front burner since our inception. Because we really believe that it's women and people of color and queers who are the essential movers and shakers in the working class. And that has given us a lot of optimism and a lot of chutzpah, and it's a big reason why our two groups are still going strong when a lot of the left has succumbed to demoralization. Tonight, we're going to be hearing from two longtime activists who've been on the front lines for literally for decades in fighting for queer liberation. We recognize tonight that sexual emancipation for women and queers alike poses a threat to the monogamous nuclear family, and as we've seen, the issue of LGBT marriage has sparked an incredible movement, and it also, though, has some ties to what's happening in the world and the economy that we want to talk about tonight as far as the monogamous nuclear family and how some of what's happening is subverting that. And that's good, because our goal is to get the state out of our personal lives. So tonight we're going to hear from Tommy Agbokoli Mecca. He's a longtime social justice activist, a radical, and a writer and performer. And his presentation will start, and then he'll be followed by Rural Wu, who is a longtime leader in Radical Women and Freedom Socialist Party. She's a revolutionary educator, she's a poet, she's a writer, and a theorist. So I really am honored to be welcoming these two fabulous guests. And then, as I said, after they speak, we'll have plenty of time for question and answer and discussion. So with that, I'd like to invite Tommy to take it away.
Okay, thank you. I have to say that I'm really thrilled to be here in this context to be talking about gay marriage from a radical perspective, because we really need to do this. I really feel like this is long overdue. So thank you for putting this together and giving us this chance. Before I start with my official presentation, I'm going to do something shameless and give a little mention of something that is happening. I think it's one of the most important struggles happening right now in the city of San Francisco. The Trinity Plaza is an apartment complex at 8th and Market. There are 371 tenants living there, low income, most people of color. The landlord who owns the property, who's the richest landlord in San Francisco, plans to demolish the building and evict all of the tenants. We are trying to save these tenants. This is the new iHotel, folks. Yeah. We are trying to save the Trinity Plaza. It is very important that people come out on Monday night at 6:30 to City Hall for a vigil that we're doing. Tuesday, the Board of Supervisors will be hopefully voting to override Mayor Newsom's veto of the legislation that will save this group of people. And we will also be there Tuesday at 12 noon outside City Hall. So if you can be there both times or one time, please come out and help save a group of working class people who are facing displacement from San Francisco. Anyway, with that out of the way, gay marriage. It's really interesting how things come together. Yesterday, I was thinking about what I was going to say tonight, and a book arrived in the mail called Historic Speeches and Rhetoric for Gay and Lesbian Rights, 1982 to 2000. As it turns out, I have a piece in the book, a speech that was reprinted called The Gay Pagans Manifesto. It was written in 1975 when I was and still am an atheist, but I wrote this piece called Gay Pagans Manifesto, and I want to quote something from it because I think it's relevant today. Quote, Christianity can absorb gay liberation. It can pretend to be accepting and loving to us while all the time greedy to snatch our cooperation. What will the church of the future be like? Will gays be worshiping a male deity, marrying and establishing nuclear family units with 2.8 kids, and supporting holy wars in the new Vietnams. The questions are still relevant, unfortunately. Perhaps even more relevant today in light of the recent gay marriage rebellion at City Hall. And I call it a rebellion only because of the people, not because of the mayor. Our mayor set off an amazing display of queer love recently, and 4,000 couples with licenses later, I have to ask, what are we buying into? What do we really want? How will we proceed into this new future that has suddenly been opened up for us? Of course, I have to say, I support the right of all people to marry. That's a given. I believe that as long as these institutions exist, as horrible as they may be, whether they be marriage or the military or even the church, everyone has a right to be accepted in them and to have access to the benefits and services they provide, etc., etc. I think we all agree on that. We should be treated as first-class citizens in this country, even as we're trying to topple the current regime and do a major regime change in the country. But this path that we are suddenly on with gay marriage, for me, it's a scary one, especially from a radical queer perspective. We used to be on a different path in the early 70s, post-Stonewall. I remember the early 70s. I came out in 1971 at a Gay Liberation Front meeting at Temple University in Philadelphia. Temple University, for people who don't know, is the working class school in Philadelphia. It's where the working class kids, like myself, got to go to college and get educated. Because the other alternative in Philadelphia is the University of Pennsylvania, which is the Ivy League school. And of course, that was out of the reach of the people I grew up with, the neighborhood I grew up with. So I went to Temple University. I always like to say that that's where the kids from the wrong side of the track went. And Temple was also a hotbed of activism in the 70s, much more so than University of Pennsylvania. So many a time the Philadelphia police would come onto the campus to break up demonstrations that got a little too heated on the campus. And usually I was in the middle of them, so very proud to say that. Gay liberation had an ideology that questioned the nuclear family, that questioned marriage, that positioned us as outside of all of this, as revolutionaries wanting to redefine the family and redefine human relationships. Basically, we didn't want to be a part of the nuclear family or of the heterosexual model. We didn't want the white picket fence, the 2.8 kids, the dog and the cat, the vast array of consumer items, all the trappings of heterosexual patriarchal society. We wanted to build a different kind of world where couples of all types could flourish and be recognized, where threesomes and groups could be families and children could be raised communally, where people could experiment with human relationships. We knew that the nuclear family was not a natural configuration. In most societies, families are extended. In my Southern Italian American working class family in South Philly, my grandparents and my unmarried aunt, who used to say, "I don't want no goddamn a man," my unmarried aunt lived with us. They lived with us. So we were not a nuclear family. That made us stick out like sore thumbs on the American fabric. But of course, at that time in the 50s, we were wops and greaseballs and dagos, and we weren't white enough yet to be accepted in America as white folks. So I've got a long history of being an outsider, in other words. Gay Liberation Front also knew that assimilation was not the answer, that queer culture should be maintained and celebrated, that becoming like heterosexuals was not a solution, but a part of the problem. We had always aspired to be straight. The closet was our form of assimilation. That's the way we kept ourselves appearing straight while deviating inside in our minds, or for a lot of gay men, in going to the parks at night and doing our thing. Gay liberation blew all of that. It threw the doors open all over America, the closet doors. It liberated us from having to appear to be heterosexual, having to play that game. But all of that wonderful questioning, you know, all of that wonderful sense and spirit of liberation seems to disappear in this struggle around gay marriage. How did gay marriage become our top issue? I keep asking myself that question. How did this suddenly happen? How did the right to get marriage licenses supersede the right to health care, affordable housing, and a living wage? If really, I mean, you know, if all of this, all of us in this society, every single individual, whether or not we're married, whether we're documented or undocumented, whether we're a citizen or not a citizen, every person living in this country, if every one of us had access to free health care, affordable housing, meaning housing that didn't cost more than one-third of our income, what a concept, especially here in San Francisco, right? And a living wage job. If we all had access to that, along with food, clothing, all the other necessities, we wouldn't need to get married in order to get these things. You know, and what I hear from a lot of people who are into gay marriage is we want the same 1,079 or whatever the number is, benefits that straight people get from marriage. And I understand that, but we wouldn't need that if we were all guaranteed that as human beings living in this country, as I feel we should all be guaranteed. Mm-hmm. I guess that's what bothers me the most about the gay marriage thing right now, is that the movement behind it is very narrow focused. It has no analysis beyond the fact that it wants to be able to do what heterosexuals can do. But what heterosexuals do in this society isn't necessarily what we should all be aspiring to do. Not that I want to criticize heterosexuals, but you know, the reality is we don't need to be imitating anybody else. We have a culture of our own that has been with us for a long time and that I feel is worth preserving. I would be more comfortable if the gay marriage movement advocated for free health care, affordable housing, and living wage for all. All the benefits of marriage for all people, not just gay couples now. It, you know, I would be much more comfortable if that's what they're saying, but I don't hear them saying that. I would also be more comfortable if the gay marriage movement recognized that some relationships are not just involving two people. That sometimes you can have more than two people in a relationship. That sometimes a household, a commune, could be, you know, is a family and should be recognized and afforded all the same rights as a family. You know, I remember the Jefferson Airplane song, Triad. Why can't we just go on as three? You remember that song? I don't, you know, Anyway, it was a song about a threesome. And this was back in 67 or something like that, so they were way ahead of their times. Marriage of and by itself is not revolutionary. It has become revolutionary in the context in which it's occurring now in terms of gay, the access of queers to marriage has made it into something revolutionary, but I don't think that it is inherently revolutionary. In fact, we should go back and look at history. Marriage. Whoa. I don't think I need to preach to you folks. You know, marriage, what was it originally about? Property rights. You know, marriage is about property rights. Marriage has been about women being treated as second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth class citizens. Marriage has been about the repression of children, the repression of sexuality, you know, the repression of lots of things. A man owned his wife and children. That has been the case up until very recently, and it's still the case in some areas. It's only been very recently that in America, women have, as I don't need to tell you all, women have gained any kinds of rights within marriage, and still, there's a long way to go. So I always have to laugh when I hear the Christian right talking about marriage being a civilizing force in history.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see it. I'm sorry.
That's right.
It hasn't been. It's been quite the opposite, I think, for the most part. It has deterred us from evolving as human beings. The other thing that in history, we look at history, the reality is marriage has also not, it has not always been heterosexual. You know, I think you all know, the Romans, the Greeks, the Native Americans, just to name three cultures, recognized marriage among folks of the same gender. And in fact, the Native Americans went even further and recognized marriage between transgendered folks and folks who were not transgendered, the Bradash tradition, for instance, which I think was probably, you know, many, many steps ahead of where we are right now. So for the right to insist that marriage is, you know, is a heterosexual institution is a lie. And I think we need to call them on that, you know. So what do we as radicals make of all this move toward gay marriage and what happened at City Hall? Here are my thoughts on it. Just a few points. Number one, I think what happened at City Hall was amazing. There are many ways in which it wasn't amazing. I went down there a few times and watched. It was amazing. There was a sense of freedom there that I haven't seen for a long time. There was a sense of pride, of family, you know, of people coming together and celebrating themselves and their relationships. And I think that's great. There was also a sense of lawlessness, which I loved. You know, yeah. We were defying the state, the feds, the church, everybody. And I loved that sense. So, yes, you know, we can't deny that. I was there. I celebrated with friends who were getting married. I took part. I soaked in this wonderful energy. Two, having said that, it is, of course, interesting to note that the majority of those who were married were white and upper middle class professionals. Where were the working class queers? Where were the queers of color? Why did they sit this one out? You know, there's a whole other analysis that we need to go into around that, and I think we need to talk about that. And I don't know where I am on time here, but...
You have a couple more minutes.
Okay, good. So I think that's something we need to deal with, and I'm not going to deal with it right now, but I think that is something we need to look at and talk about. Three, Gavin Newsom has been touted as a hero. I mean, I've heard him compared to Harvey Milk, all this stuff. And I have to say, it bothers me. It really bothers me. Not only because, you know, I've been fighting Gavin Newsom for 2 years now around his homeless policies. We're fighting Gavin Newsom around this. We're fighting Gavin Newsom around gentrification in the Bayview. Gavin Newsom has never been and will never be our friends. However, he does need to be, you know, he does need to be given credit for what he did. I don't trust his motives. I think he did it more for political reasons, and that's a whole other discussion that we can talk about during the question and answer period. So, you know, that annoys the hell out of me. Another point is radical folks that I know have gotten married, have gone down there and gotten married. And I guess one of the things that it raises for me and should raise for them, and actually some of them have said this to me, is does the state have a right to recognize our relationships in the first place? I don't think it does. The state has no right to tell me that I can marry, you know, so-and-so, or that, you know, if I give me this piece of paper, now, you know, now there's something here that is, you know, inseparable, blah, blah, whatever. I don't give them that right. And I don't think we should give them that right. The term same-sex, think about it. Some of the people who married there were not same-sex. They were transgender. So I think we need to be careful about the language we use. This has been pointed out to me by transgender friends of mine, that we should be careful about the language we use, and we should talk more maybe in terms of people of all sexes being allowed to marry or something. It's just a thought. Mm-hmm. And I'll rush ahead. What are we buying into? I asked that question earlier. What are we buying into? Obviously, we're buying into gay divorce. We're buying into gay custody battles. We're buying into estranged spouses kidnapping their kids and running across the state. Basically, everything that heterosexual marriage sees, 50% divorce rate. You know, I hope we're not buying into sexual abuse of children in relationships, because most of the sexual abuse that happens, we know, happens within marriage. Most kids who are sexually assaulted are assaulted by people they know, and that usually means a family member. All these things that are really frightening and that heterosexuals have not dealt with, how are we going to deal with all this? And I really want us to do that. Another thing, and I really am getting ready out here, corporate America. Corporate America is just waiting. They're waiting, drooling, because they know this is a market. They know they're going to market those wedding gowns to us and those tuxes and those honeymoons and wherever. You know, they're just waiting in the wings. So I think we need to think about that too, that, you know, they're waiting for that. I think what I'll end with is the fact that, you know, up to this point, we have had the privilege of being more free about how we defined ourselves and who we were. What happens when gay marriage becomes the law of the land and suddenly we have gay parents saying to their kids, now you better get married. Now I don't want you sleeping with that person until you get married. You know, those, all that pressure going to be there. You know, is it going to become, you know, you've got to have that white picket fence and the dog and the this and that. And you've got to have the designer dishes or whatever they get when you get married and all that stuff. So we really, in conclusion, we really need to think, and I'm really glad that we are here doing this as radicals, but we need to go out and really get this discussion going out there in the queer community. We need to get this discussion going. We need to get thousands of people in these rooms talking about these issues, because if not, we're going to wake up to a very scary world.